Good morning. Today is Friday, March the 3rd. Joining us this morning, not the head honcho of the city of Eureka. He's got important meetings to do.
Yeah.
We've got Jesse Weller, the director of public works with us, who probably knows more about what's going on in Eureka than some of the other folks at that meeting that you aren't at.
Deputy director of public works.
Deputy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Even more to the point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I may know even more.
Yeah.
The nuts and bolts of it.
Oh, our quote this morning. Let's see if we can find one here that's kind of halfway pertinent. Huh. Okay. This one will work. Oh. I wonder. No, they started at 8, didn't they? Oh, this is a great one. Bernard, some French guy. Quote, "It's a great obstacle to happiness to expect too much." Particularly around budgets, I would imagine, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Oh, gee. So when I talk with others from the city about roads and water and all that kind of stuff, I tend to get a funny glazed response, which a lot of times kind of indicates that, okay, well, do we say what is or do we say what we need to say? When I think of the roads in Eureka, if I was going to, what grade would you put on it?
Like if we're talking an A to F type grade?
Yeah, or a 1 to 10. Take your pick.
Sure. We're probably in a C to D level, depending on the class of the road, I would say.
Is it something that most small rural cities have? On the scale, are we normal, above, below in California?
I think in California, we are probably slightly below average. I know that some jurisdictions do have local funding sources that are outside of the funds that would come down from the federal and state levels.
One of the things I would think would be very difficult, particularly is, you know, if you're somebody who takes pride in what you do, is to look at it and go, yeah, I do that. And not be able to do it the way that you would really like to do that. When it comes to application of resources, is it the philosophy? Does it make more sense to do a little bit everywhere or do it really good in a few places?
Boy, that's a good question, because when you have limited resources, you really have to try to stretch your funds to the limit that they can be stretched in order to, you know, to try to do what you can to keep our roads in an operable state. I would say we employ the try to stretch them as far as we can to get the furthest amount we can get out of the dollar, rather than putting, we have very limited funds when you're talking under $300,000 a year to try to maintain hundreds of miles of roads.
Is it a priority situation, or is it a lack of employment, jobs, things like that, that are more of an impact?
I think it's a lack of, I guess, if you could clarify the question a little better.
Ah, I'll think about it during the break.
Okay.
It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:24. I think I've refigured out the question. I'm not sure. Jesse Willer is alongside Deputy Director of Public Works for the City of Eureka. How do you establish the priorities and how you're going to, what plan to execute, I guess, is the simplest way to say it.
Sure. And, you know, we're talking about streets. I think that's a good way to kind of, you know, look at that one in particular. The priorities of streets, we look at the pot of funds that we have in order to execute projects, and then say, okay, what's gonna get us the biggest bang for our buck as far as maintaining our streets, you know, keeping the roads in the best state they can. And reality is, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. You know, putting cold patch in a pothole, you know, that's not cutting it. I feel it when I have somebody call up and tell me, you know, can you go out and look at this road? It's terrible. It's failing. And, you know, I have to respond back. I 100% agree with you, and I wish there was something we could do about it, but the funding is not there to do larger paving projects on our roads, to really maintain the roads or sidewalks, what have you. When it comes to wastewater, where there's a lot more needs, so to speak, down at in our collection system or at the wastewater treatment plant, it becomes a little more difficult to prioritize because you have a list of 12 projects that are all a priority at the same time. So you really have to try to find a way to, you know, look at how you can execute those projects in a timely manner in order to, you know, keep up the maintenance on our facilities.
Funding streams always different between roads and whether it's sewer or wastewater?
Correct. Yeah, the water and wastewater funds, they come from, you know, the rates that folks pay to keep the water turned on and, you know, the sewer going down the pipe.
Is it keeping pace? I know there's a study that's been going on, but it's Eureka's wastewater system. Functional, yeah. Is it being replaced at a proper pace?
We're trying to catch up. That's where we're at right now. I would say not yet. Looking at what we have to do from an age of the infrastructure perspective, looking, okay, that's one part of it is how old's the infrastructure? You know, it degrades over time, be it a mechanical system, electrical system. Those degrade at a different rate than concrete does. Concrete has a longer lifespan. Then there's the other side of it, which is regulatory requirements coming down the pipe at you from the board that say, you know, thou shall meet this requirement. And we've had some changes that really are going to dictate improvements at the wastewater treatment plant and in our collection system on the wastewater side of things.
When that occurs, the changes, is there normally a break-in period? Effective 18 months from now. Effective in 2 years, so that you have a chance to adjust. You know, if it's a new part that has to be bought. Well, gee, if every city in California all of a sudden is trying to buy this part that normally they sell two of in a year, somebody's in trouble. Because you can't get to it. Is there that kind of a break-in period?
There's a schedule that they give you. It says, here's the schedule that you're on in order to meet these requirements. And it's dictated, you know, you have to by 2030, you know, so you're on a 15-year.
So it's not like next week?
No, yeah.
You don't get those emails.
No, sometimes it feels like, hey, 12 to 15 years. Boy, that's coming right around the corner when you're talking about, you know, pretty major improvements. So, you know, it's not next week, but it's coming very quick. And they try to give you a time frame that is, in their mind, attainable.
The Martin Slough, let's see, what was Interceptor,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't mean anything to normal people, but let's say pipe.
Yep, sewer pipe.
Yeah, okay, now we're talking. Part of what we were told is that allowed for expanded capacities, future growth, all that kind of stuff. Is there going to be a need for another something similar to that for the developed part of Eureka in the future? Or does everything kind of tie into that one and it's just a matter of making sure it goes from point A to that pipe?
I think with Martin Slough and the other part of our collection system, Martin Slough is kind of on the south edge of the city limits, and it incorporates a large part of HCSD's, you know, the greater Eureka area, their sewer that comes down the pipe from that side. So I think looking at expansion going out in that direction, that's really, you know, when you're referring to expansion from Martin Slough, I think that's what that's for. As far as the built out part of the city, we don't really see, you know, as far as infill development, that really an increase in capacity. Really what we're up against is trying to manage our flows better through managing the inflow and infiltration into the pipe, which is basically, you know, if there's a broken pipe, groundwater getting into the pipe, or roof drains or runoff that comes from the surface that gets down into the sewer system, which shouldn't be going to the sewer system.
Loose joints.
Yeah.
Yeah, I boil this stuff down for you. If we had economic growth in our area, and let's say Eureka city boundary went up instead of spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not, Cutton's would get their share, Myrtletown would get their share, but if Eureka's population proper grew by 5,000, would that change anything? Is the capacity still there? Could we handle it without huge investment?
No, we'd need some pretty major investment. I think at the same time, we also have, you know, our capacity is, we're at capacity, so to speak, with our last permit through the regional board.
So, yeah, it's not just out and cutting, folks.
No, it's here now.
It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Jesse Willer from the Eureka Public Works Department. Jesse, the concept of having a plan is dandy. And then you get things happening like public legislation, like Prop 64. Okay. You knew it was coming. You didn't know what form it was going to happen. You didn't know how it would be implemented locally. But now you've kind of got the processing zone for the marijuana folks. Okay. Hello, surprise. How do you move quickly on, well, let's use this one as a specific. Okay, now it's it's zoned. Now it's somewhat legal. Well, at least it's being interpreted as being legal at this point. The city is doing what it's going to do and allowing what it's going to allow. Water's involved in all this stuff. Water going in, okay, user, larger numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Water coming out, contaminated or at least impacted. How do you wrestle with that alligator?
Yeah, I think from the water going in perspective is, you know, that's one part of it. It's pretty simple. You know, that's a simple, you know, pay your bill.
Run the meter,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the water coming out is a little different in that, you know, we have a pretreatment program at the City of Eureka where when somebody gets a business license, you know, and starts an operation like this, we go out and, you know, we look at what they've proposed to do. We look at what the potential effluent is coming out of their project. And then, you know, depending on what that is, you know, it can go down the pipe, or, you know, they need to do some pretreatment on it. They need to treat it to make sure that they're not sending anything down the pipe that's going to be detrimental to our treatment plan or to meeting our requirements.
Is that a complicated process, the treating? Is it a fancy piece of gear that you guys have given them five models to choose from, kind of thing, and they all qualify? If they want to abide, how do they? And for you guys, how do you know that it's something that is, it's a process that you have confidence in?
Yeah, well, I honestly don't know the specifics of of what the, you know, what we're looking at as far as the treatment levels that they needed to obtain. I think that we do, the process that we have is, you know, it's very, you know, it's chemistry and looking at what's coming out, looking at the, it's not complicated, I guess, from that perspective. Now, in we request that they provide us a breakdown of what will be coming, you know, what they will be putting into the system. So we understand what that is even before they get to the point, hopefully, that anything is leaving the pipe.
Restaurants have certain things that they have to do. I don't think most of us are aware of what they are, except we see the funny-looking trucks driving around town every once in a while,
sure,
cleaning things up. Is their standard a challenging one to achieve?
I think it's a challenging one to maintain. You know, for the most part, grease interceptors are, you know, what a restaurant needs to have outside, and those are, you know, those are standard across the country. But, you know, I think maintaining a grease interceptor is another thing, and making sure it's working properly.
Is there a parallel between that and the marijuana industry now? It would seem like there would be.
It's a good question.
Some kind of a comparable, because I don't think anybody wants that stuff in the system.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Nobody wants it in the system. But how do you guys put in a whole new level of, or new area of monitoring like that? I mean, here's a new industry. Here's an industry that's newly legal in the state. Now you have the standards. It's not like somebody doing it in the backyard, where before, you know, there was a whole bunch, code enforcement was more involved rather than you guys being involved. Now this is something that is being recognized as an industry in the state. Where do you, how do you create a new thing? Set of standards.
Yeah, set of standards. I think the standards are already set as far as what can be discharged to the treatment plant. So I think keeping that, you know, that standard is there, and then trying to, you know, be proactive with the people that want to, they, you know, that want to do it on the, you know, legal side. They come in, they meet with the city, and they try to get an understanding of what they're, and they're doing a development, they're bringing something online, and it goes for any type of industry that comes into the city. You know, they oftentimes they meet with the city, they try to understand what the parameters are that they need to meet, and then at that point it gives us a chance to understand what's going on and how we can work with them to try to, you know, come up with a way that meets our requirements.
Anybody in the manufacturing sector?
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense.
Sure.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:41. We'll be back with more.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Jesse Willer. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Jesse, you've got a new budget year that is coming up, but you guys have these weird things called construction years.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about last chance grade, so you don't have to worry about that one.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, no kidding. What's the big elephant? What's the project this year? What's the thing that you're looking forward to in this construction season that will be kind of cool?
Kind of cool.
From an engineer's perspective, obviously.
Yeah, no, I think from the coolness engineering perspective, we have a project for our collection system. So that's for the wastewater collection system, you know, where your sewer goes when you flush a toilet or when you take a shower. To look at reducing inflow and infiltration on a basin-wide level in the city. So we're going to look at one of our basins that has a really high rate of inflow and infiltration, and we're going to try to systematically address that problem. So on a larger footprint.
Does this include backhoes? and digging and noise and toys and that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the twinkle in your eye. Okay.
Well, it's a lot of, it's covering a lot of, you know, it's covering miles of pipe. And that's what really gets me excited is, you know, being able to address a larger project. Right now we're shooting for close to $2 million for the project in order to address this issue. And it really stems from a number of things that will, at the treatment plant, the requirements we're being held to now by the state board and that's where, or the regional board, excuse me, and that's where it stems from. And it's exciting to get that project up and running.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Eureka's approach to paving roads now involves steel plates?
There's no truth to that whatsoever.
Boy, are they all over the place.
Yes.
Is that undergrounding? Is that PG&E doing their infrastructure? What's that one all about?
Yeah, a lot of stuff you see, you know, over in like the 14th region, summer, that area is PG&E. And they've got large gas main projects that they come through. I think they're at phase 45 now of their project and 150 more to go. Now, I'm exaggerating, but they really do have a lot of phases, I think, up into the 30s as far as these projects that they have to kind of update their gas mains in the city of Eureka.
Is this coming off of the San Bruno situation, or is this looking to avoid a San Bruno situation?
I think indirectly, yeah, okay. Looking to avoid. They're you know, they want to make sure their infrastructure is in good shape.
Now, when those things get all cleaned up, you're going to have a patchwork quilt. And one thing that I remember back from John Murray and the old timers is that once you cut the surface, it doesn't have nearly the strength because now you got independent moving parts.
Sure.
Is that setting Eureka up for even more challenge until you can get in there and really do significant overlays on a large percentage of the roads?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that when you do have cuts in the pavement surface, when you break that layer, it gives an area for it to get in and cause damage to the pavement, and it won't last as long. I think that they're doing a lot of work in the streets is something we keep an eye on, and it's something we're trying to plan ahead for and try to have some procedures in place that when things get put back, they get put back in a manner that's a little more robust.
So you kind of, you guys follow up and it's a little bit better off than what it was before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we don't want them to leave it in a worse condition than it was before. We want it to leave it in a better condition than it was before. Now, that's not saying we can make them repave the entire road because we're not able to do that, though. That
hey,
would be
PG&E,
really nice.
Baby.
Yeah.
That may be next time around, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for coming by, Jesse.
Thank you.
Join us Monday morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug some more yellows. See you then.